Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good middle of the night, and welcome back to Cases of Color. It feels so good to say that. I am so happy to be recording this episode. You guys have no idea how good I feel. I know that I've recorded some episodes in between. I've been taking a little bit of a mental break. And I'm doing so good, you guys. I'm feeling so good. And most importantly, I'm feeling passionate. And I've said in the beginning that, you know, Case of Color is a passion project for me. And if my heart's not in it, then I just shouldn't be doing it because I'm not going to bring it the way these victims deserve it to be brought and what's going to really resonate with the audience. And I want to say a couple things. Number one, if you are new here, welcome to the Case of Color fam. I'm so happy to have you here. Please follow Cases of Color on Instagram and on Twitter, as well as Facebook. Every time I post a new episode, I definitely open up the dialogue on Instagram. We have such good conversations in the comment section. You guys give me your unfiltered opinions, whether you liked it or not, your thoughts, your own theories and things like that. And I love that. I absolutely love that so much. So thank y'all so much for that. And I definitely want my new people here to be a part of it. And to my OGs, to my ride or dies, to my people who have been waiting patiently, have sent me such lovely and supportive messages on Instagram saying that you're still just going to wait and that you hope that I'm doing okay. Number one, I'm doing great. I'm doing so good. I'm feeling so good. Like mentally, spiritually, I'm good. But number two, I'm just very grateful. It did give me a lot of anxiety that, man, the longer I wait to come back, I don't know if I'll have my audience. And you guys haven't gone anywhere. I literally get new followers on Instagram every single day, new listeners. And I haven't posted things in months. And you guys are still here, which means, one, this podcast is really important. It has value. But number two, that the people who listen are truly dedicated and loyal. You're still talking about it. You're still sharing about it. And I'm just eternally grateful, and I couldn't be more grateful than I am right now. So anyways, now that I've gotten that out of the way, I just wanted to say, please like and subscribe so that you can continue to listen to episodes if you have not done that already. If you are back, hi and welcome again. I'm not going to make any promises that I can't keep. I kind of cringe that I was like, oh yeah, I'll start posting this and that. I'm going to do my very best to do every 2 weeks. I think that works with my schedule, what I currently have going on now up until the new year. When we get back into 2022, I'm going to take a small little break because January is my birthday month. And then after that, we're going to go back to a weekly schedule. So that is my feasible plan for myself that makes sense, keeps the episodes and content coming while also making sure I'm honoring myself and creating a balance. So every 2 weeks, so 2 weeks from now, you'll get that episode. I'll still be active on Instagram. And that's why I say follow me there, because I post on my stories. I ask questions. I answer questions. Sometimes I get on there and talk to y'all. I try to respond to as many messages as I can, without being completely consumed by social media. So yes, just please follow me on socials. And I'm also going to move the platform to more podcast networks, like Stitcher and things like that. Right now I'm only on a couple, but I definitely am about to widen that as well. So if you've had people who have like had to look me up on the internet, look no further. Your girl will be more places in the upcoming weeks. And I'm really excited about that. But that's not why you're here. You are here to hear a case, and a case is what I have. I cannot remember the person who recommended this to me, but I did write it down when you told me, and I finally got the time to really look into it. And I will say, this is one of those cases that it really frustrated me because you can't really find anything. And there's like an actor or a comedian with the same name as this victim. And sadly, when you type the name in, unless you type in suicide or murder or anything that would tie into it being a crime, it's very hard to find stuff. And even then, the news articles all kind of read the same. It's just, it's interesting. So let's get into the case of Joseph Smedley. This happened in September of 2015. I give the date range 27 September 2015 to 28 September 2015. And I'll explain that why that is in a little bit. And as you listen to the timeline, you'll probably be able to pick up on why I say that. But don't worry, I'll touch in on that. All right. So Joseph Smedley was a 20-year-old young man that was a student at the University of Indiana, and he was a member of the Sigma Pi fraternity out of Indiana University. And he was a sophomore there, and he was studying biochemistry, and he had big plans for his future. I mean, according to everybody that knew him, you know, he was very happy. He had a zest for life. I mean, he was one of those people who lit up a room. He was very well liked. He didn't have a lot of enemies. Like, people just genuinely enjoyed him. Anybody that interacted with him, even his professors, people really loved him and cared about him. And he never let on that anything in his life was going wrong or that he was unhappy. And I think that's what makes this case so intriguing and also very confusing, because you really don't understand what happened. So let's get into that. Around 4 a.m. on September 28th, 2015, Vivian Smedley, who is the sister of Joseph Smedley, received a text from her brother, and the text read, "Vic, I love you. I'm leaving the country. By not telling you why, I'm keeping you safe and protected. Please don't try to contact me at this number. It won't work. I'll contact you once I'm set up overseas. Thank you for everything, Viv. I love you, and I'm sorry." Now, Vivian replies the way any sister that knows her brother well, you know, and she's just like, LOL, shut up. And I saw that some people were kind of giving her a hard time about her response. And it's kind of need people to understand, like, sometimes you read something and it's so off-putting because it's so out of character that that's just how you would respond. Like, oh my God, if you don't go on somewhere, you know, and that's kind of what happened. But fortunately, when she didn't hear back from him damn near immediately, she went ahead and reported her brother missing. And after she reported him missing, Vivian and some family members made a 1-hour drive from Indy, where they live, to Bloomington, Indiana, which is where the university is. And they went to the campus, and they also went to Joseph's apartment. Now, Joseph lived in an apartment very close to campus with three of his frat brothers from Sigma Pi. And she was hoping to find just some type of anything to indicate, like, why did he send me this? I mean, maybe even hoping to find him there. And when she got to his apartment, she found a letter. And it basically kind of said the same things that this text message said about, you know, don't try to contact me on my cell. It's not going to work. And it was signed Smedley, which is his last name, which, it come to find out, people in Sigma Pi used to call him that. Just that was like their nickname to call him. But his family didn't really call him that. And according to Vivian, and I just say according to Vivian because I am not sure if an actual handwriting expert looked at this, and I wasn't able to pinpoint if that happened or not. But according to Vivian, it was not his handwriting. She stated that Joseph had a very nice handwriting and that his handwriting was not sloppy. Like, he didn't even write in the lines. If you look, it's like he just wrote on the paper and it's just diagonal to the lines that you would write on ruled paper. So it was just very off-putting to her to find that note. And a couple other things that were off is that all of his belongings were in his room. Phone charger, laptop, all of his clothing. The only things that really weren't there was Joseph himself and his cell phone. And there was just that note, and it just didn't make sense why this note is there and kind of what was going on. So the family then spent days. I mean, they were searching all over the local area near the apartment complex and the university, trying to find Joseph or see who's seen him. And if possible, you know, did someone know something? But for days, there was nothing, for 4 days. And then on October 2nd, that is when the family was notified that Joseph's body was found in Griffey Lake. So apparently, some point during that day, a fisherman was out on the lake and he noticed a body floating in the water. And he contacted the police immediately. and they got the body out of the water. The coroner arrived, and the coroner immediately states that it definitely seems like a drowning, which you could infer from the water, and that no foul play was suspected. Like, right away, no foul play was suspected. And the issue here for me, in my opinion, is that they treated finding his body in the water as immediately as an accident / suicide before actually taking the time to do some investigative work. And I noticed that in a lot of these situations where you have interesting circumstances, a lot of time is not taken to try and figure it out. It's almost like, oh, thank God this looks the way it does so we can get out of doing our job that people are paying us to do. That is the vibe that I get whenever I hear about stuff like this happening. Because at the end of the day, how are you going to know until you actually do some research? And I mean, even with the handling of the body, they put his whole body into the body bag with all evidence attached. And when I say evidence attached, because an interesting thing about how his body was found is a backpack was strapped to it. And the backpack had 66 pounds of rocks in it. And they didn't take the time to remove that bag. They just left it on the body and hauled it off to the coroner's office. Didn't bother to check the surrounding area, the lake for footprints. And at that point, I mean, the crime scene had probably been so contaminated. Would it have even helped? At this point, it might be trails of their own footsteps. And I think that was one of the biggest mistakes in this case, is they immediately jumped to treat it like a suicide or an accident versus treating it like there could possibly have been a crime there. And I was listening to Nancy Grace's podcast, and I know Nancy Grace is like hit or miss with people. Either you like her or you don't. I think she's one of those people. I personally like her. But one of the people who she has on there, and I really hate that I am fumbling his name right now, he's very smart and he's very skilled in his field of forensic science. But something that he always states, he said, the moment you walk on a crime scene, you need to treat it like it's the worst crime that ever happened. And he said, every move that you make, every step that you take alters your crime scene. He said, and if you go into a crime scene making assumptions, you're not going to find what you need to find. He said, if you go in with some preconceived notion, you're not going to be looking for what you would be looking for if you thought things were awry. And I love that he said that, because I feel like that is the point, right? If you're going to be a forensics person, if you're going to be an investigator, if you're going to be a detective, you need to go in with the mind frame of what am I looking for? And then I think that's when you chip away. And again, some stuff is very clear cut and it's just to the point. And there's no denying it. This, though, this was different. And this was not a situation where it's undeniable. And so I really want to discuss, in my opinion, the poor investigative work of the Bloomington PD. So the first thing that was a huge red flag to me is the roommate's stories. And from what I have seen in the very little I've been able to find, is that there's not much information on the roommates. I honestly wasn't even able to find their names. But the roommates claim that everyone went to bed around 11:30 p.m. and that that's the last time they saw Joseph. For perspective, that night there was a blood moon. And it was said to have been visible in the sky. And this was per some heavy Google research. From about 10:35 to 11:17, maybe even 11:30-ish p.m. that night. And there is a theory, because it has not been confirmed, because again, the police are not giving a lot of information because they've kind of closed the door on this case. But there is a theory that maybe he was out viewing the moon with his friends, right? And if you've ever lived in a city, you know that the best place to view stars and things of that nature would be like in a less lit area, i.e. Griffey Lake, where the body was found. But the thing about that is that it doesn't really make sense, because Joseph's phone pinged around 7th and Walnut Street around 4-ish a.m. when he texts his sister Vivian. And that area is like a strip of bars. It's a bunch of bars in like a downtown area. Again, this is a college town. So that area in particular is full of bars. And around 6:30 a.m., cell records indicate that he was near Highway 37, and that's near Griffey Lake. And the police took dogs out there to sniff around, but there was nothing to be found, like no indicator or anything like that. And then 2 months after that, the coroner rules Joseph's death a suicide, and the family was livid. I mean, they, and rightfully so, because how? Like, make it make sense. How do you come to this conclusion so easy? And they could not believe that they were just so willing to state firmly that this was a suicide and that there's no way that it was possible for Joseph to have killed himself, you know, not with the evidence and most of all, everything that they knew. So some things to note is that in December, Vivian, which is the sister, and her husband went to campus, and there was a critical conversation meetup, and they talked about race relations on the campus, amongst other things. And it's important to note some of the differences in how Indiana University handled this case compared to another case. So taking you a different route, in June 2011, there's a white female student. Her name is Lauren Sperrier. She went missing and was never seen again. Very long story short, after a long night of drinking, going to different friends' houses, she unfortunately left someone's home, even though they tried to convince her to stay, allegedly, and she has never been seen since. So even 10 years later, the case remains unsolved. And the difference in how IU handled this is that there was immediate action and notification of the student body. When Lauren went missing, they put people on notice. They were trying to look for her, search parties. I mean, it was immediate. And in the case of Joseph Smedley, he was reported missing on Monday, and the student body was not even notified until that Friday, right before his body was found. And so additionally, this young man's name, or this young woman, Lauren Sperrier, her name is mentioned at graduations and it's mentioned on campus to this day. I mean, to students who may have even been in the single digits when she went missing. On top of that, it received national news coverage. I mean, there are people who have never even been in the state of Indiana who know who Lauren Sperrier is. Yet, Joseph Smedley, I mean, even I, who try to keep my ear to the streets about situations like this, I wouldn't have known about it if one of you did not tell me, if one of you did not put me on to the page Justice for Joseph on Instagram, which if you are not following that page, you definitely need to, because they have all of their petitions linked to it, their GoFundMes linked to it, and we'll talk about that more at the end. But I say all of that to say, IU handled this very poorly, and it's almost like they didn't give a shit about him missing, like his life didn't have any value, yet a student who goes missing and looks different and is different, by all means, just being very blunt about it, that takes more precedence and that has more tender love and care. And that is what they notified the students immediately about. But for Joseph Smedley, they did not do that. They didn't even take the time. And even for podcasts, there are a lot of podcasts about Lauren Sperrier. I mean, people have dedicated whole series to her, trying to line out the timeline, trying to figure out what's going on. And I would like to say there's nothing wrong with wanting to seek justice for victims of crimes, regardless of the color of their skin. I would like to be clear. It's not what I'm trying to say here. What I am trying to say is I was able to find Crime Junkie, we shout out to them. They did a really good job covering it, even with the little bit of information that they had. And Cold Case Chronicles covered it. And I didn't even get to listen to all of their episodes. I believe they did a 4-part series, which I think is absolutely awesome. Definitely give it a listen. They talked to the family. They talked to students who went to school with Joseph, amongst other things. And the parts that I have listened to have been very good. So shout out to those two podcasts. But I say all that to say, this is, again, not even something that it's easy to Google. It's hard to find information on this crime. And going into the crime scene and having a hard time finding information. Again, when I told you, when Joseph's body was found, he had a backpack strapped to him and not on his back like it's traditionally carried. Instead, the backpack was strapped to the front of him, and it had a few papers in it, an external hard drive, and a phone charger, and along with that, 66 pounds of rocks, as I mentioned earlier. But there is no information, public information, I would like to state, public information that even mentions how the backpack was affixed to his body. Like, was it tied to him? Was it locked into him? I mean, I have so many questions because I'm just really trying to understand how that happened. Or, and again, you can't find that information. I can't even tell you how it was affixed to him except that it was facing forward. And Joseph is described as somebody who knows how to swim, somebody who's able to swim. So the fact that 66 pounds was just found in the front of his bag in Griffey Lake, which is not that deep compared to some other lakes in the area, it's very troubling as to how this occurred in the first place. And I mean, when he was found, he had a pair of binoculars around his neck, which that's what made people theorize that he was going to watch the blood moon. And again, I say theorize because it has not been confirmed that that's what he's doing. Police have been very tight-lipped. They're also no longer looking into the case anymore, so they don't really have new information because they're not even trying to find any. Was my shade subtle or no? I hope it wasn't. And his wallet was found in his pocket. Nothing appeared to have been missing from his body except his cell phone. And that brings me to the cell phone. To this day, even his family does not know where his phone was located. Like, his phone was found, but it is an undisclosed location. No one knows where the phone was located at. I'm going to go ahead and say, I don't think it was found at Griffey Lake. And I don't think it was found near that street where it pinged. I don't know where it was found. I just don't think it was those two places, which tells me that someone took the phone and tried to dispose of it and get rid of it. I just want to know how they found it and what goes along with that, because that just doesn't make any sense. And then additionally, let's say he was still up at 4 when he texted his sister and he walked to the lake. The lake is about 3 miles away from where he was, you know, and you're dealing with somebody who had a vehicle. He had a car. So why would you walk 3 miles when you could drive? And when his car was found, which again, there's not much details on where exactly it was found. Like, this is such a frustrating case to look up, because I'm like, I could tell you like what JonBenet Ramsey had to eat before she died. I have no clue where this young man's vehicle was even found. It's just very frustrating when you can't even find information because people are not reporting it properly. But I highly doubt that he walked 3 miles in the woods, in the dark, with all of these items. And again, I'm not saying he didn't find the rocks while he was at Griffey Lake, but it just doesn't make sense. Like, it does not make sense to me. And so some of my thoughts and theories that I have, and again, these are my personal thoughts, these are my personal theories. I am not accusing anyone of anything. I would never do something like that. I'm just giving you my personal opinion. But my first thought goes to this fraternity. So Sigma Pi was a predominantly white fraternity and has faced multiple suspensions and was literally on a suspension period from June to December of 2015. So during the time that of Joseph's death and to date, and this article that I read was dated 19 April 2021. They are currently suspended until August of 2023. And you want to guess what they're suspended for? Hazing, endangering others, dishonest conduct, and noncompliance. And this chapter at Indiana University specifically has dealt with multiple suspensions and issues. And it's getting to a point where they actually aren't even guaranteed, like after August 2023, when their suspension is done, to still be allowed to have a chapter at Indiana University. That's how tired these people are of this chapter of Sigma Pi specifically, because they keep doing things. And it's sad, you know, because they've had a chapter at the university since 1924. However, the issue is that they keep having these issues. And another thing that was weird to me, you know, if you've ever been associated or been around people who are associated with fraternities and sororities, you know that the loyalty runs very deep and the dedication runs very deep and they take it very serious, as they should. And Sigma Pi actually didn't even release a statement for a long while after Joseph passed. And they even said that they didn't put one out because they no longer associated with him due to him not paying his dues. But if you were to go back on some of his Twitter and some of the tweets I found, prior to his death, he was still very active in his fraternity life. Now, that doesn't mean that he paid his dues, but again, he lived with frat brothers. He was still very involved. So it's just kind of, it's not making sense. You know, the math is not mathing. And one of my personal theories that is that there's a possibility that this was like a hazing attempt or a joke gone wrong. Allegedly, Joseph was found with alcohol and THC in his system. And there's nothing wrong with that. If people want to get high, I don't villainize people who smoke weed. And I don't villainize people who drink unless it turns into abusive. And then it's not villainizing. It's just, I just want you to get help. So none of those things are negative things, but allegedly it was found in his blood. So he might have been partying, could have been under the influence. And if somebody forces you to puts rocks in your bag, straps the bag to you, and let's say pushes you into a lake, if you're inebriated, you might not be able to get up. Also, 66 pounds on your body, especially on the front of your body, that's a lot. And that can weigh you down, especially taking into account that when he was found in the water, he had his shoes on, he had all of his clothes on. Just your clothes alone can make it harder to swim. And like I said, Joseph was someone who was noted as being a good, confident swimmer. But even the most confident swimmer, some people cannot manage that with 66 pounds of dead weight on their chest. Now, add being under the influence and maybe not being at your full physical capability because of that. And I could see where that could be an issue. I don't know if somebody maliciously meant to kill him only because of how everybody speaks about him. However, I do believe it could have been a prank gone wrong or a hazing situation gone wrong. Or maybe because he didn't pay his dues, that was their way of trying to get at him, you know, like just like to mess with him. And then it went completely wrong. On that same note, you know, there's some speculation about him not being enrolled in class for that current school year. And I only saw that one place and not anywhere else. So I'm going to say that is alleged as well. And so I want to go down the suicide rabbit hole for a brief moment. You know, I think it is very common for people to carry on as if everything is okay and everything is just fine when they're not. I mean, I myself have done this and still do this at times when my mental health is at its worst. So it's very possible that, you know, he managed to keep up this facade and maybe life was getting too much and maybe he was having a hard time or, you know, he didn't actually enroll in classes like he told his family. And again, I haven't seen that verified anywhere, so that is completely alleged. It is hearsay for sure. So, you know, maybe he didn't want to be around anymore, but the only thing is, to drown yourself is a lot. To be able to physically drown yourself is a lot. Your body naturally wants to survive, and I think that's the thing people don't realize, like even people who hang themselves, like it's natural for their hands to go up to their neck. It's your brain, your body has trained itself to survive, right? And that is a very interesting, I don't want to say weird, but it's an interesting way to choose to commit suicide. And it just seems very illogical to me. It doesn't make sense to me. That is how he would go about it. I would figure that if somebody was going to be able to pull that off, they would need to be inebriated, possibly unconscious, for that to even really make sense, you know? And even with them saying, well, he was saying he wanted to leave. The thing is, there's no Google search history of him Googling traveling out of the country. He did not even have a passport. So regardless of what he may or may not have said to his sister, which I'm not fully convinced that he was the one sending those messages, what would his capability be of that? And that was so unlike him, like, right? And that's why she responded the way she did, which is the LOL, shut up. Like, it was so improbable. It just doesn't make sense. And I think, you know, what kills me the most is there was a second autopsy that was done on Joseph. And it was determined that there was obvious hemorrhaging on his back, and it was consistent with being held down. And the Bloomberg police refused to work with the sister, which the sister is who he was the closest to at the time of his death. But they insist that it was a suicide. And what's even more odd is that instead of dealing with the sister, they're dealing with his father. But the thing with Joseph's dad is Joseph was actually emancipated as a teenager. He's not close with his dad. Him and his dad were actually estranged at the time of his death. I did see an interview that was done via the Justice for Joseph page where the sister Vivian and the father, Joseph Smedley Sr., were in an interview together, and things looked great. And I genuinely hope nothing but positive vibes for that family. It's hard enough losing somebody. Dealing with any type of emotional strain is just, you know, it's too much to bear at a certain point. So I really hope that their relationship is positive and it's doing well. That's what it appeared to look like to me, or at least just, you know, focused on the same goal, which is getting justice for Joseph. But it was just very strange to me that they wouldn't work with her, that they wouldn't talk to her, that even now with the second autopsy, they refuse to try to look into it more. So in the current moment, his case is not reopened. But I really think something happened here. And again, I don't even know to say that it was malicious or it was done on purpose. But I just hear about these frat pranks where there was one that I heard about where they made this 19-year-old drink like a handle of alcohol. And he was a very small guy and it killed him. And nobody knew what to do. Now, do I think that they just really wanted to get him fucked up and like him get sick and call it a day? Yeah, I do. But did they take it too far when they forced him and they literally told him like, drink it, like you can't leave till you drink it all. You can't leave till you drink it all. And then it killed him. I do believe in instances like that where you end up killing somebody because you're a dumbass and you want to play these fucking reindeer games with people's lives. And I truly believe that that is the type of situation we're dealing with. But I think unless Bloomberg police is willing to do their job and truly look into this properly, we're never going to find out what happened. And every day that goes by and every year that goes by that this crime goes unsolved and it doesn't get properly investigated, the evidence gets older, people's memories get foggier, and things don't get solved. And my hope for this is that Joseph gets the justice that he deserves. That is what's most important. That is what this family deserves. And that is what is going to make things right. And I really want you all to follow Justice for Joseph on Instagram. The link is in my bio. Please, please, please check that out. Also, I really want you all to go to their GoFundMe pages. They have all their links, and I'm going to link that down below. They also have a change petition to get the case reopened, and I would really love it if you all would take just a little bit of time on your smartphone to sign that petition. That stuff is very important, and it really, truly, truly does make a difference, and I could not be more just indebted to you all if you all would do that. So you guys, this is the case of Joseph Smedley. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you guys more than I could ever say. Please follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Cases of Color. Interact with me, talk with me, and definitely send me some case suggestions. I switched out phones and I don't know if all my information didn't transfer over or what, but I'm going to post in the next day or two. I'm going to give people a chance to listen to this. The next day or two, I'm going to post to get case suggestions because I want to consolidate them all in one place. versus trying to sort through all my DMs, because you all have sent me some good stuff. So just be looking out for that post on Instagram and on Twitter, and send me your case suggestions so that I can have them and start chipping away at them. But you guys, thank you so much for listening. I love you guys so much. And wherever you're at, have a good morning, good evening, good afternoon, or good middle of the night. Thank you.